Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
So we're going to talk now about personality tests, personality types, how our personalities form, with someone who has a great personality herself, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan from the Department of Psychology in Maynooth University. You're very welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So when we say that someone has a great personality, what do we mean by it?
I think we kind of compliment certain types of people, and we suggest generally a great personality. We say a great personality is someone who's outgoing, the life and soul of a party, kind of bubbly. You know, you'll describe them as having a great personality.
But is that what we value? Yeah,
I think so. I think we call that a great personality because we have this social thing where we think that being outgoing and bubbly and talkative and this life and soul is the most valued thing, when really that isn't a great personality. It's just one of many personality traits that you can have.
And it can be a pretty annoying one at times.
Yeah. My husband definitely finds it annoying sometimes.
Okay, so societally that's the kind of thing that is valued in the current culture.
And different cultures value different personality types. So if you went to China, by the way, or you went somewhere Eastern and you were that type of person, you wouldn't be considered a great personality. It's a social faux pas to be, you know, in a party, be the life and soul. So it's definitely culturally driven.
Yeah, well, I suppose it goes back to the individualistic culture we've built up over the last 50 years or so or more. So are we born with a particular personality, or do events shape it, or how does it work?
Well, it depends on your... Okay, psychology is a series of crazy people trying to explain human behaviour. So it depends on which school you agree with.
Okay.
If you went with... Let's say you went with Freud. Freud would say that we're all born with these sexual drives that where we want to dominate each other. And when we meet the world, we get like a conscience and an unconscious, that, and our personality is derived by the interaction between that. It's a bit crazy, but, you know, some people really believe in this, that our personality is formed by our experiences in the world, the rules that we experience, and how the rules go against our instincts, which are to dominate.
Okay.
That's some people's views. Okay, in terms of...
We're all repressed by the...
We're all repressed.
And oppressed by the rules.
And Freud said we were repressed by our sexual angry drives.
Okay.
And then you had Jung, who said we were all trying to self-actualize and be our true selves, and we're good and driven by good. And both said what we meet in the world, the rules we meet, actually affect our personality. So like being ourselves sometimes doesn't actually match with the rules of the world, and therefore we might become neurotic or anxious or really happy and free. So there's them kind of views. And then if you move forward in psychology, from 1960 onwards, we began to be able to measure things. And now we know that children are born... There's three temperaments that generally children come into the world with.
Yeah.
And about 90% of kids can be categorized into one of the three temperaments. So we have, and you might think about your own family or yourself and how you were described. So we have difficult, slow to warm up, and easygoing an easy child. Okay.
Yeah.
And even when I think about my three sons, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to shame them, but I think I had three. I had three different types. The difficult one, how you would explain difficulty is, it's not that they're a difficult person, not going to turn into a difficult person, but how they react to the world and how they process stimulation is different. So like my youngest, let's say, I'm not going to name him, he would be like, when he's hungry, I want it now. There's no waiting. Give me it now. And he would scream immediately. I remember my husband going, what do we do with him? Because the middle one was this slow to warm up, kind of easy natured baby. And so he actually would cry for food and would be settled with no food and just a hug for a little bit of time. So we know that babies have these three temperaments, but we don't want to say, oh, if a child is difficult, that means they're going to be a difficult.
Yeah.
What we know from temperament is that parents need to adjust themselves to the temperament of the child. So if you have a difficult child, your job as a good parent is to actually adapt yourself. Feed them quickly. Know that they're not, they don't like changing situations. They don't like hot and heat. They don't like overstimulation, and adapt yourself to that.
So meet their needs.
Meet their needs.
Whereas if you've got the easy one, the chilled out baby, we all know.
Yeah.
You can basically just leave them there, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I love a chilled out baby.
And me too. I remember with my, the one that's slow to warm up, like I always think
so
about.
Slow to warm up, is that guarded? Suspicious a bit?
Yeah, quiet. Doesn't like new situations. Takes time to get comfortable in new situations.
Okay.
So I think about the three of them, putting them on a swing, you know, and like the easy one was like, yay, this is great. Yeah. The difficult one was like, get me off this.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the slow to warm up one was like, I'm scared, you know,
And then gradually kind of, okay, this is actually okay.
This is okay. And that's actually, that follows people into their lives. So that's kind of the start of personality. And
then that's the temperament.
Yes.
So then, but you say that doesn't necessarily dictate the personality. So what's personality then?
Well, it depends on where, what your stance is. So like for me as a psychologist, for me, personality is your traits. If you think about personality as the enduring features of yourself that differentiates you from everybody else, Brendan, I need to know how you're going to, if I'm in a relationship with you as a friend or a family member or whatever, I need to be able to predict how you're going to act in a party or how you're going to act if I buy you a surprise or if there's a stressful situation. And generally, we all have enduring traits that predict how we're going to act. And in psychology, what we've done is we've tried to find out what them traits are.
Yeah.
And there's loads of theories. So you might have heard of like type A personality, type B personality.
Okay, so we're getting into the various kind of tests and categories now. What's type A and type B?
So if you follow a typology approach to personality, there's generally four types. So there's competitiveness, which is type A. There's relaxed, which is type B. There's conscientious, which is type C. And then there's anxious, which is type D. And like most of us, like you would hear probably most conversations around type A. Oh, she's a real type A. Actually, myself, I actually hired a coach recently because I was like, what am I doing with my life? What am I going to be when I grow up? So I had this coach and we were having a conversation. And just at the end of the conversation, she said, I can tell that you're a real type A personality. And like immediately as a psychologist, because I think I know everything scientific, I'm like, my alarm bells are ringing by that. Yeah. But I didn't take that as a compliment. Like some people think type A is
alpha,
like...
That's like alpha female.
Alpha,
yeah.
But I didn't like that. Like I want to be easygoing. I want to be, you know, relaxed and open.
They're the best type of alphas though, because people kind of, they can bring people along with
they
them
can.
Because they don't seem too alpha-y. Yeah.
But
so you're a disguised alpha,
yeah.
I like it.
A disguised alpha. But like, so yeah, the science around the type A, type B thing though, it's not really there, you know. What I would say is like, you don't always have to have science. I think it's really amazing that we all start asking ourselves, what type are we? You know, what are my traits? What suits me? So I'm not really bothered. I am bothered as a psychologist by the science, but I'm not really bothered. I think people exploring their characters, their traits, understanding themselves
if
is amazing.
If it helps, themselves a bit
yeah,
better.
Do
okay.
it.
So tell me about Ocean then, which is a test people might know.
So this is what, like, this is the main approach that we believe in psychology. This is the trait theory, the dominant trait theory. So what it says is that everybody falls along these five traits. So we've got openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Okay, and we can all basically be measured along these. We all have them traits. We all fall along the continuum, but some of us are more dominant in others. Are more dominant. Say for me, extroversion. But like, extroversion isn't being social. So that's really important for people to know.
Yeah,
like you're not introvert and not social. And then extrovert and social. Extroversion is actually about social dominance. It's actually wanting to be the lead in a social environment. So introverted people still want to be social. They just don't want to stand in the middle of the party and have everybody listen to them. But they want to be at the party. So there's but we fall along the continuum generally on Ocean. And there's loads of science for that.
And back to what we were saying earlier, extroversion is what is prized in our culture right now, is it?
I think so. I think we like agreeable people as well. Like, but agreeable people, agreeableness, being high on agreeable.
Okay, so we all love. What does agreeable mean?
Brendan, if you say to somebody, I can't be there at 12, you've got an appointment, I can't be there at 12, I'm gonna be an hour late, and they go, oh, that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
I thought that was people pleasing and we weren't supposed to be like that anymore.
We're not supposed to. Well, we are. So agreeableness is, it's a continuum which we all fall upon. Okay. But if you're high in agreeableness, actually, people who are higher in agreeableness have the worst probably outcomes in terms of their employment, because they won't actually say things and cause difficulty. But we kind of like agreeable people well. Yeah. I love it when I don't have to like worry that my friend's going to care that I'm late 50 times for our meeting or whatever. So we value agreeableness, but actually being too agreeable isn't always a good thing.
Okay, are you agreeable?
No.
No, okay. At least you're comfortable with who you are anyway. Okay, tell me about conscientiousness then.
So conscientiousness, probably in terms of our education system and our employment outcomes, extroversion and conscientiousness have the best outcomes. Okay. So because our education system completely values conscientiousness, which is studying hard, getting your work done, being on time, making sure everything's done. Being quite rigid can be conscientious. So conscientiousness can spill over. So if you have someone who's high in conscientiousness and high in neuroticism, you've got big issues because they're constantly anxious. So neuroticism is about being anxious and being unable to manage stress well. So high neuroticism. So if you've got a conscientious person, they're amazing. My project manager is the most conscientious person ever. And she's not neurotic, which is perfect.
Okay.
So neuroticism is following rules, knowing how to, having order, knowing how to study hard, being well behaved.
And is conscientiousness good for people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
Brendan,
if you imagine you're an innovator and you want to, and we're looking for someone to create a product, we're looking for someone to design something new. Having someone who's really rigid and follows the rules is not going to contribute well to entrepreneurship or innovation.
Okay, yeah,
so
yeah.
It depends on the circumstances. I think we need to think about personality as like not good or bad, but just is. And then we fit people to what suits them rather than thinking that one thing is bad. Because honestly, if you're high conscientiousness, no matter how much you try, like we say that that's a trait. It's innate. It's in you. And while how it expresses itself may adapt, the trait is always going to be there. And if we put a value to that and we say that's bad and this is good, people can't really change that.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I would
so
be
it's,
more
it's
like...
About finding
know yourself.
Where that person, find where conscientiousness works for you.
Yeah.
Does conscientiousness verge on control freakery if it goes too far?
I think it can. So I would say conscientiousness... kind of with low agreeableness, if you think about agreeableness as being easygoing and non-agreeableness as not, them two things combined together may result in like a bit of controlling behaviour. But conscientiousness is a really positive character.
Okay.
And it's what we value in education. So the kids that are most conscientious get the best leave insert. They get the best outcomes in terms of education.
Yeah, and then I come back to like that half the successful people that I meet through this job will all say, oh, school wasn't really for me. You know, the people who do, like conscientious people probably great at doing the do ordinary things really well.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they do extraordinary things.
Well, extroversion in terms of who we look at, who leads, who becomes a leader, who does well in industry, innovation, extroversion is generally the trait that we're seeing mostly in people who will lead. That social dominant trait is probably the most successful in terms of work outcomes.
Okay. So then, neuroticism.
Hmm.
Which sounds kind of as if it is allied to conscientiousness in a way, is it?
Well, neuroticism is about how we manage stress and our emotions.
Okay.
So people in high neuroticism don't handle stress very well. But, and people who are low on neuroticism go with the flow, have good emotional regulation. So when things get difficult, they can emotionally regulate really well. The thing about neuroticism, and I kind of feel like people get a hard time. Like, I kind of like people who are a bit neurotic myself, probably because I am a little bit myself.
Yeah.
I think, like, there is some places in the world where we need people who really have, like, a high stress level
who worry about things.
Like, a safety officer or someone who's in charge of, like, a big amount of data.
Yeah.
I'm not saying saying that they should be able to handle stress well, but I mean, hyper focus on things that are stressful or can cause trouble or damage. Like if you've got someone who's managing airplanes, and you know, I'm like, I want someone who's a little bit like hyper focused on things.
Yeah.
I don't want someone who's just like, you know, blasé and takes it pretty easy. The problem with neuroticism is the emotional element to it. So it's the inability to manage stress. So what we need is people who have the hyper focus, but the ability to manage the stress. And with neuroticism, that's probably one of the things that people find really difficult to manage, is stress and difficult emotions.
Okay. So you said earlier, though, this is just who people are. Can you change where you go on the scale with any of those things?
I don't know if you can change it. I definitely think you can adapt your behaviour. So you definitely can adapt how you express the neuroticism or how you express the conscientiousness. So like you can definitely, but I think the trait, and what we say in psychology is the trait is there and it will always be there. So Brendan, I'm always going to be socially dominant. Even if I'm joining like a library or I'm in a book club, it's just not going to change.
Okay.
And also as we age, you know, how we express our personality, it changes. So like I'm not going to be out partying and drinking and whatever, doing whatever I would have done in my 20s. I'm probably, you know, being this life and soul of the bingo club when I'm 70, but yeah. It's how we express it. I'm not saying it can't change. I am saying, though, generally the trait and the push, the thing that drives it, that's pretty consistent in people.
Okay, so we need to accept that. But yeah. Then try and manage it.
People are going to
be wondering now, where do they fall on all this? So I think you can go online.
You can go online and do the ocean
test there. Yeah. And then you get they will look at, it's the interplay between them all that yeah. they look at.
And generally people are not extremes. Like it's quite rare that people are really, really extrovert or really, like all of us fall somewhere along all the continuums. So just to remember that, like it's very rare that you're going to find that you're extremely neurotic or extremely extrovert. Some of us are. I think I'm extremely extrovert. But like mostly people fall within the middle of each. But I think it's good to understand it.
Okay.
And you can do the ocean online. What's really interesting with personality is like the psychologists are trying to see if there's other traits. So recently they've been looking at grit, you know, this real American term.
Yeah.
And one of the things about my own story is like people are like, you're so resilient, you have grit. And they were looked at that over the last 10 years and it hasn't been shown to be something.
Really?
Yes.
So it's somewhere a combination of the other five or whatever.
It's a behaviour. Yeah. Behavior, it's a value, it's a part of your cognition maybe, but it's not a trait, it's not something inherent in a person.
So behavior then, which like we do judge a lot of people's personalities and their behavior, that is an outcome of their traits, but it's actually not fully connected.
No, exactly. And there's some that are not to do with traits. So sometimes there's your state or your motivation. And so like they've tried to look at grit. It's a real American term. They've also now there's a new six factor model that's being introduced and they're looking at honesty as being a characteristic of personality.
Okay.
And the science is out on that. It hasn't yet been validated. So I'm all about like the science of this as well as the woo-woo. I love the idea of like doing other measures of personality. I'm not against that, but I love the science and the science really does reliability, validity, psychometric testing and honesty. The jury is out whether that's something that we're
in. I presume it's connected to conscientiousness.
Yes, but I think they're thinking of honesty in a different way. Conscientiousness is more about like rule following and adhering to rules
and
following deadlines, whereas honesty is about, you know, being open and honest. And well, not open, being honest in terms of your personality.
Okay, but it could be that we're back here in 5 years' time and that there's a whole new model.
Yes.
By the way, is Myers-Briggs gone now? That
well,
used
not
to be
gone.
The one, wasn't
it? It's still there. So
yeah.
The Myers-Briggs, Myers-Briggs is I swear to God, it's an example of how millions of pounds can be made from unscientific personality testing.
Stop, the Myers-Briggs people will be on.
No. Well, it's not, honestly, but the truth is, like, they worked in education, they're a mother and a daughter, and they came up with this measure of personality, so, which is the Myers-Briggs, you get like a four letter term, but the science behind it, like, actually, you could take the Myers-Briggs today, and you could take it tomorrow, and you could have four completely different results, which suggests then that it's not personality. Remember, personality has to be consistent, Brendan. I have to be able to predict how you're going to act today, tomorrow, the day after that, if it is your personality trait. And if it's not that, then it's something else.
There's someone texted here. I love listening to Katrina. Okay, yeah. And the concept of personality. I don't like to box myself into any category, but I seem to exhibit INFJ personality type. So introverted, neurotic, but sometimes I'm very extrovert and social and love being in people's company. It's a strange combination of everything. It's full of nuances, as is life in general. So yeah, INFJ, introverted, intuitive, neurotic. Feeling and judging that
yes.
person is.
Yeah. But the reality with that
I love
person,
that they're judgy, but, I know. But intuitive.
And she's judging me well, just yeah, to say, yeah, or okay, he's judging yeah, me yeah, well. For, but the truth is with the Myers-Briggs, like that's an exact, like millions of people have taken that survey. And Brendan, you could take it tomorrow. It is very changeable. That's the thing.
Okay, so, okay, we leave it there. So, yeah.
Let's not get sued by them because they're very rich.
No. I think we've said what needs to be said about it now, Katrina.
Yeah, exactly.
Teach personality as a class.
Yeah, yes? I teach it as a class. What I love teaching is psychometrics. So, you know, you might have done a personality test for a job. I don't know if you did a personality test to work here, Brendan.
I've never really had a job. Go on.
Yes, but we actually, I taught psychometrics when I was in Trinity, and I've taught psychometrics in lots of personality in lots of places. And reality is, I love looking at how we actually measure personality.
So what is psychometrics now?
Psychometrics is the measurement of personality and intelligence. It's the scales that you might do, but they're validated scales. So what's really nice, really great thing about teaching psychometrics is that what we do in psychology is, because we know that there's some personalities that we prefer and people lie on the scales. So like when you do a scale for a job, people will know, oh, they're not going to want me if I'm neurotic in this job. So they lie. So what we do in psychology is we put in lie scales. So we put in, we fix the scales so that we can check if people are lying. So it's really interesting. If you did something for the Bank of Ireland, let's say, they ask you a question, then you go on to the next question, then you go on to the next question. You can't go back and they reverse score, they reverse the question or reverse the scales to see if you're actually consistent in your responses.
So
my message there is don't lie on a psychometric test. If you're not suited to a job, you're just not suited to it.
Yeah, as they used to say, you're only lying to yourself.
You're only lying to yourself at the end of the day.
What blows the students' minds most in the personality
class? I think it's Freud. Like, because Freud kind of talks about... I love Freud, probably because... Listen, there's hardly any science for Freud, but, like, he came up with this really comprehensive explanation of human behaviour. And one of the things that really shocks the class is the stages of personality development. When we start talking about the phallic stage of development, phallic, if you know what that means, you know what it means. But basically, what that stage says, that boys want to dominate their mothers sexually and not have sex with their mothers. Okay, so they want to dominate their mothers. They want to own her.
Okay, so they compete with the father.
Yeah, no. If they have a father there, the father's job is to come in and dominate the boy, put him back in his place, and then what happens? They solve this this challenge that exists within that, the phallic challenge. What your job is for a healthy personality is to solve all of the challenges in the stages. When I introduce that in class, the students are like, this is madness. They're like, what?
I'm surprised you haven't had complaints these days. Well, I'm surprised people aren't triggered and
we did have
and
a complaint. I did
it.
Once have a complaint, but it wasn't.
I just said it's
Freud.
We leave that on the side with Myers-Briggs.
It was Freud that had the problem. It wasn't me. I'm just presenting his work.
You're right.
Yeah.
Now, you say there are a lot of personality myths as well.
Yeah.
For example, we talk about somebody having an addictive personality.
Yes.
You don't think that's a real phrase.
Okay, no. So, like my PhD was an addiction. There isn't a personality type that is an addict. So, there's myths that exist in psychology. That first job as a lecturer is to dispel some of the myths of psychology.
Okay.
Some of them myths are, you might have heard this, if someone's sleepwalking, don't wake them up, they'll end up in a coma. That's absolutely untrue. Wake them up, they could hurt themselves.
Right.
But as humans, we hear things and they become like, you know, rule of law when they're not. And so the idea that someone's got an addictive personality is flawed. Okay. So people don't have an addictive personality. You're not more. But if you are you're high on openness, you are more likely to engage in risk-taking behaviour.
Okay.
So people who become addicted often score very highly on the openness scale and sometimes quite highly on the neuroticism scale. However, it's not a predictor. So you don't have an addictive personality. It's not something that's untreatable or unchangeable. The problem with saying someone's got an addictive personality,
it's a determination. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you can't change that. And you can. You know, people can heal and people can heal from addiction.
Yeah.
And so I'd be worried.
Addiction is mainly about pain, isn't it?
Well,
there's biology
as well. There's lots of things.
Okay.
But definitely pain and the easing of pain, for sure.
Opposites don't attract.
So this is funny. Yeah, so in the relationships, well, like I was talking about this to the researcher, you know, Brendan, people who are equally rated on their level of attractiveness and personality are the most likely to last.
So really?
If you're a 10... If your wife is a 10 and you're a 7, you're probably not going to last.
We're doing all right.
Oh, they?
We are, yeah.
So you're probably both 10s then, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
But it's with certain personality types, there's definitely difficulty if certain personality types are together.
But go back a minute. What's wrong with if one person is way better looking than the other person?
We don't actually know what this
really,
is.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, like if equal attractiveness, equal intelligence rating. So the more closer people are rated by independent people in terms of their attractiveness, the more likely it is that they would stay together.
I think it's because beautiful people live in a different world to the rest of us and the world treats them differently and they think life is a completely different thing.
Well, there is a whole psychological explanation for that. It's called the halo effect. So we treat beautiful people differently, Brendan.
Yeah.
If you are rated as to be beautiful, we will rate you as being more friendly and more intelligent and more kind just because you've got a pretty face.
You know what? They've never had to make the effort. They've never had to develop a personality. So can you change your personality?
I would say the tendencies towards certain traits, no. You can't change them. I'd say you can adapt and you can work towards adapting some of the parts of your personality that are not working for you. But the tendency towards neuroticism, once it's there, will always be there. So the stress. So what you need to do is ensure that you're managing your life in a way that's reducing stress. You've got good stress management techniques. You know what to do when you're in that circumstance, when the emotional difficulty is there. Similarly, that means if you're introvert and you're not really into social dominance, like when you're asked to present in a room, that you're like actually training yourself to like mimic the behavior that might be needed for that particular activity. But I would say from what we know, the traits are permanently there and it can be expressed in different ways, but they generally your tendency towards that trait will always be there. And Brendan, we need to be able to predict what each other are going to do. Like we're mini scientists, all of us. If we didn't know how we were going to act, so forget about how you're going to act. If I couldn't predict how I was going to act in every situation, how would I manage the world? Imagine everything. I had no way of predicting the way I was going to act.
Oh my God, yeah.
So
yeah.
My traits have to be consistent for me to be able to decide what suits me, what doesn't, what makes me happy, what makes me unhappy. So our traits are generally quite consistent. There's just queries around which traits are the consistent ones. And we're asking questions whether honesty is a trait, grit is a trait.
Okay.
But I'd say they last.
It strikes me though that in order to do that managing and everything, the thing you've been saying a few times here is that awareness is the start of the journey.
The thing I love about psychology, the thing I love about personality is it's a great way of knowing yourself. You need to know yourself without judgment. Like, you know, there's space for all types. If you're extremely neurotic, you're going to be loved. There's going to be someone who loves that, that's suited to that. If you're extremely introvert, same. But know yourself, adapt if you need to. But knowing yourself, whichever way you do it, whichever test you do, whichever explanation is the most important thing.
Know your limits. Okay, you're on the way to Cork now to get an award.
I am, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, IACP, the Irish Association of Counselling Psychotherapists, are giving me an award for being a brilliant person.
And listen, I didn't realise it's 2 years since you first came in here when you had published Poor.
Yeah. It's like 690 days or something since Poor's out and it's number 4 this week. Just saying.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be like the female version of Frank McCourt. Angelus Ashes 2025,
okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, so, or Brian Adams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was really annoying, by the
14
way.
14 weeks at the top of the charts.
I still get annoyed when
listen,
I hear it. But next book.
You have a new book.
Well, I haven't. I'm writing a new book. I can't talk too much about it, but I will say this. You inspired it, Brendan. This show inspired it. So you invite. I posted something on Instagram. It was about my body. I was invited in here to talk about it. We had a great conversation. There was an amazing response. And it actually reminded me that I have something to say about bodies and the way okay. we treat our bodies and the drive to shrink ourselves. So the next book is going to be out next year. And I'm in the middle now of writing it and getting myself. I'm really in the middle of it right now.
Okay, well, we'll see you then, but we'll see you in the meantime. And listen, it wasn't me inspired. It was one of my very talented colleagues here inspired that. So you remember that.
I will.
Okay, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan, thank you very much. That was excellent. We'll take a break.